Tonight, a number you may not have heard, 97 million. 97 million. I want you to remember that. That is how many times, as of this late March, a piece of software you have probably never used by name has been installed onto machines around the world. It doesn't have a face, does not have a marketing budget, does not appear in very many keynote addresses, and yet every major artificial intelligence company on the planet now ships it, supports it, and builds on top of it, including ours. Its name, it's the Model Context Protocol, also called MCP. For most of you watching, the name, it's not going to mean anything. Maybe you've heard it, maybe you haven't, but that's the point. The most consequential piece of infrastructure that's used in AI, and it's quietly becoming irreplaceable. And tonight on AI Today, we're going to talk about what happens when a protocol becomes a highway. We're going to talk about the changes when the application, the icon on your phone, the window on your desktop, the metaphor that has been defined computing for 40 years, begins to dissolve into something else entirely. We're going to talk about the orchestration problem that nobody in the AI industry wants to discuss in public. And we're going to talk about the question of sovereignty. Whose agents are allowed to speak to whose systems, and who finally gets to decide? I'm Dr. Alan Badeau. This is AI Today. And we're going to delve into these over the next four segments. When MCP was first announced in late 2024, almost no one paid attention. You heard me talk about it a little bit. There's some good things and some bad things that I discussed, but not many other people were mentioning it. It was published as a working group proposal, a small piece of open documentation suggesting that AI systems and the tools that they use learn to speak to each other in a common language. It made sense, right? There wasn't a product launch. There was no glossy demonstration that came along with it. It was just, there was a specification. There were a few reference implementations and then an invitation. And that was about 18 months ago. In March of this year, though, MCP crossed 97 million installs. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Every major AI provider, OpenAI, Google, Microsoft, Meta, you name it, they now ship compatible tooling. Companies that initially built their own competing approaches have quietly, one by one, converged onto the standard. The protocol won not because it was the most elegant, not because it was the most secure, not because it had the loudest advocates. It won because the cost of not adopting it became, quite honestly, very quickly higher than the cost of adopting it. And this is the way standards become infrastructure nowadays. So I want you to consider the history, right? The internet itself ran on a protocol nobody chose by committee. It was the TCP/IP protocol. That simply became the cheapest way computers could talk to each other. HTTP did the same thing for documents, and then SMTP did the same thing for email. Each one was, of course, technical. Each one very unglamorous. Each one largely invisible to the public. And each one, once adopted at scale, became the layer beneath everything else. The plumbing that, quite honestly, made the surface possible. MCP is that kind of layer. It's not for documents. It's not for messaging. It's for agents. Ooh. So what does it actually do? In the simplest terms, MCP gives an AI model a standardized way to reach outward, you know, to call a tool, to open a file, to query a database, to execute a function in another system. Before MCP, every AI application had to be wired by hand to every external resource that it called. A custom integration, you know, for the calendar that you were using, a custom integration for an email server, you name it, it was a custom integration, and it was getting very difficult to keep up as we tried to expand the AI's capabilities. Now, after MCP, the wiring becomes uniform. Write once, connect anywhere, right? Sounds great. That uniformity is what produces, you know, that explosive adoption that we're starting to see. Now, not into production, but at least adoption. And what it produces, though, from a second order effect is that we're gonna look at those things for the rest of the hour. We're gonna examine them because there are some good things about the plumbing, and there's some bad things, right? It's invisible until it leaks, just like normal plumbing. So let me give you a sense of the scope of what we're really talking about. So as of this spring, you know, MCP is of course integrated into, you know, Anthropic's Claude, you know, base family of capabilities, and OpenAI has it, Gemini, Microsoft, you know, it's through Microsoft's entire stack, you know, Meta's development tools, and even Hugging Face is using it really across the board. It connects all those agents to enterprise platforms like Salesforce and Workday and GitHub and Notion, and it bridges that consumer services capability also. And you're looking at from, you know, Spotify to Uber, and Apple supposedly is preparing iOS 27 to allow third-party AI providers even. And that would include, of course, Anthropic and Google. And to operate those operating systems, you know, with MCP, it's going to be the underlying mechanism to do that. Now, the protocol is moving from servers to laptops to phones. And that means in a year, it's probably going to be in your watch. It's going to be in your car. It's going to be pretty much in any edge device. So then I want you to ask yourself, though, what that means. It's not technical, it's practical. It means the AI you use does not need to know in advance which services you're using. It means the agent in your phone can be handed a tool it's never seen before and figure out how to use it. Because the language of asking is now the same. It means the boundary between your applications, the file folders, the inboxes, the calendar, the spreadsheet, the code you're running, whatever it is, it's dissolving into a single addressable space that any sufficiently capable agent can now navigate. From a developer's perspective, that's a magnificent thing. However, it's also a very dangerous thing, both at once, and they are not in conflict. You heard me talk about it a little bit in a show a year ago, but if you would ask me if I thought that proliferation of MCP was really going to dominate, I would have said, 50-50, right? But definitely not the case. So here's what the official specification of MCP actually says. And I'm going to read this to you because I want you to understand it. And, you know, in the section addressing trust and safety and when an AI agent is about to take an action in the world, for instance, on your behalf. And I want you to pay attention to this. And I want to get this right. So I'm going to quote this. Okay. There should always be a human in the loop. Model context protocol, official specification, trust and safety section. You can go find it. That's great. So I want you to sit with that and think about it for a moment. Should. Not must. Not will. Not can operate without, but should. The language of software specifications, should, is what you say when you want the right thing to happen. But you don't want to be the one held responsible if it doesn't. Oh, it should have happened. It's a polite request, right? It's the asterisk that you see at the bottom of the page. It's the line that means, well, we hope you'll do this. But if you don't, the protocol still works anyway. Don't worry about it. 97 million installs. Every major AI provider in the world. A should is where a must belongs. That's not a flaw in the protocol. It's not a feature of how every protocol at this scale gets adopted. You always build for the lowest common denominator. You make the safety language permissive enough that nobody refuses to ship it. You become infrastructure first, and you secure infrastructure later. So when I come back, what changes when the application itself, the metaphor that has organized human-computer interaction for 40 years, begins to dissolve into the agent layer? And what's going to replace it? So stay with us. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI Today. For 40 years, the dominant metaphor of computing has been the application. The application is the box. It's the window, the icon, the thing you double-click. It's a self-contained universe. You launch it, work inside of it, and then you close it. Pretty simple, right? Your operating system is a desktop on which these boxes sit. Your phone, it's just a member of the grid, right? Lit up in color, ooh, yay. Demanding attention, somebody calls, whatever. We organize our work, our communication, our money, our memory, our entire digital lives by which box we are inside at any given moment. And that metaphor is dissolving. Now, I want to be careful in how I say this, okay? The application is not going away tomorrow, okay? The icon on your phone will still be there next year. But the primacy of the application, the idea that interacting with a computer means choosing which box to be in, that is being absorbed into a layer above it. And the layer above it, it's the agent. Now, look at Workday and what they announced this spring, right? Hundreds of new AI agents. Conversational agent spans HR, finance, IT, legal, you name it. Specialized agents for payroll, auditing, contract negotiations, planning. You know, these are not features inside of the Workday application. They are interventions above it. So the user increasingly does not even open Workday. The user delegates a task, and the agent opens up Workday on their behalf, executes from inside, and then returns the results. Now, we've talked about agents many times. We're building them. We have our own platform, Janus and Atlas, from the cyber perspective, right? And you know, there are key functions and similarities around that. You think about autonomous activities. You think about task completions. You think about automating an entire workflow inside of Janus. And you know, Zeus, our supreme agent, goes in and the user just types in their goal and it generates all that application for you. The agent then recognizes what you're trying to accomplish, and Zeus, of course, assembles all the tools, the workflows, the other agents it might need, the back-end systems, the front-end systems, the front-end applications, delivery, you name it. And you never open one to do it yourself. Now, we have, as we've talked about, humans in the loop that we're building directly into those, forcing an interaction to take place. But not everybody's doing that. So, you know, let's take Apple for an example and how they're building iOS 27, right? And what they're calling extensions. You know, the operating system will allow you to choose which AI provider operates the device, not which assistant you talk to inside of a particular app, which intelligence sits above the entire device, reaches into any app, and acts on your behalf. Is it Anthropic? Is it Google? Whoever you pick. In each of these cases, though, the application doesn't disappear. It's just demoted. It moves from being the subject of your attention to being the object of your agent's attention. You used to open the app and you'd use the tool. Now the agent opens the app to use the tool, and you may never see the app at all. That is a profound inversion. It's the inversion that MCP, more than any other piece of infrastructure, makes possible. Because MCP is the language by which our agents reach into the applications. The protocol is what makes the application transparent, what turns a closed box into an addressable surface. And it raises the question that nobody's asking out loud. If the application is no longer the thing the user opens, then what is the user opening? The answer is something more like a relationship. So when you delegate a task to an agent, you're not launching a piece of software. You are entrusting an entity that knows your preferences, hopefully, your history, your priorities. It's in line with the things that you want. An entity that even decides on your behalf which tools to use and which not to use. And so that entity that's acting in your name across systems, you have never directly touched. That's not an application paradigm. That is something older than computing. That is the relationship between a principal and an agent, a relationship that has existed in law and in commerce for centuries, in which, we have until recently reserved for human intermediaries. Your lawyer, your accountant, your real estate broker, your stock broker, your assistant, whatever. They were the agents. Now you have a software agent that can do all of those things simultaneously, even across every system that you own. And the entity managing that agent, the company that sits on top of the stack, has in effect become the trusted intermediary in your digital life. This is why the question of which model operates your device is going to become the most important consumer technology decision, really, of the next decade, I think. Not which phone, not which laptop, but which intelligence. So Apple is preparing for that question, clearly. Microsoft preparing for it. Google, same. The MCP protocol is what makes that question coherent, because no matter which intelligence wins, which one you put your trust in, that intelligence will need to reach into the same set of applications, the same set of services, the same set of tools. And it'll reach into them through MCP. 40 years ago, the computer industry argued about operating systems. And then 20 years ago, it argued about browsers, right? And 10 years ago, it was about, ooh, app stores. Now, the next argument's already underway, and it's about agents. Makes it very interesting when there's that much control in any part of the architecture. So when we come back, the part of the story that does not show up in the headlines, the part where 97 million connections without something above them to coordinate becomes a swarm rather than an intelligence. And what that means for every single enterprise leader watching tonight. So stay with us. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors. There's a number from this spring's enterprise research that I want every executive in the audience tonight to hear, and that is 32%. So across major surveys of enterprise AI adoption this year, IBM's Think 2026, the McKinsey Frontier Firm report, the analysis that come out from Gartner and Forrester, the consensus figure is fairly consistent that roughly 32% of organizations report sustained organization-wide impact from AI. Not surprising, right? We've talked about these things before on other shows, and it's disappointing in some ways that it's not higher. It's disappointing that there's not a greater adoption and going from proof of concept into production, but that's fine. That's a, we'll continue to talk about that on other shows. But, that other 68%, almost two-thirds, right? They describe AI deployments as pilots, experiments, or capabilities that just don't scale. There's a lot of reasons for that. And we talk about those all the time. And that's, as you've heard me talk about before, that's why we developed Janus in the first place, right? To help facilitate that, to help make that transition easier. But leading firms, you know, we're pretty much calling them frontier firms now. Much like DigitalNet.ai is, we are running on average about 3.5 in times the AI intensity per employee of typical firms. And that gap is not narrowing, it's widening, because folks believe it, folks are using it the right way, we're building systems the right way. Now, what's really the other difference, though, between the 32% who are winning and the 68% who are not? It's not access. Every company in both groups has access to these models. It's not money. Many of the firms in the 68%, you know, 68% are spending more than AI firms in the, you know, 32%. It's not talent, although, okay, talent does matter, right? The single most consistent variable separating really the winners from the strugglers, it's something more fundamental. And that's the orchestration. And we talk about that all the time, but we've never really spent this much time digging into it. We've talked about Janus and how Janus is the platform that you can gather that orchestration, and why Zeus is the supreme orchestrator around that and helps the user facilitate and get through the process and understand what they're trying to do. But that's also why we're using Zeus to provide that layer above all of our other AI tools, so it can reason and it can help the users understand them better. And in some cases, though, other firms, you know, that's a struggle. The sequences that work, the context, the recoveries from failure, the, you know, types of protocols that are used. The orchestration piece allows that to take place, and Zeus allows us to accelerate that entire process. The 68% don't have that. They have agents, right? They've got models. They have MCP connections. What they don't have is anything coordinating them. They don't have anything going across application to application to, you know, to orchestrate and optimize who's using them and what resources are being deployed and when are they being deployed and how they're being deployed and are they safe? Do you really have a human in the loop? Is there a should in there? Well, there's a lot of shoulds in there with the firms that are struggling. Now, here is the inconvenient truth, because we like to talk about these things, that nobody at AI conferences are saying out loud. So we know that MCP solves the connection problem. It does not solve coherence. So 97 million connections without orchestration is not an intelligence. It's a swarm. Every agent reaching for every single tool, every tool being accessed by every agent, every action talking and taking place without any layer above it that's reasoning about whether the damn thing should have access to it or not, whether it fits the larger objective, whether it's consistent with what the operator actually wants it to do. Sounds like my, when I was, a dissertation, it sounds like a bowling alley. And it's operating like that. It's noisy. And This is the problem the security community has been trying to put out there for a while. An increasingly urgent language. Remember, I was the first one to even mention this almost a year ago. And it's not getting any easier. It's not getting any better. It's one of the primary reasons we created Atlas to help support those. So, here's some. Simon Willison, he's one of the most respected independent voices in the field, right? And he writes on his blog about, the protocols should versus must language. And I really encourage everybody to go out and take a look because it's put very eloquently. And I'm gonna try to summarize it. But of course I'm not gonna do quite as good a job as he does, but here's what he says. He says, I suggest these shoulds need to be a must. And he's got a whole bunch of other supporting things with that. So it's not just that. But it is a very deceptively quiet sentence. Treat the polite request as if it were iron law. That's what it's saying. The reason that he writes it that way is that the structural risk an agent reaching out through MCP, encountering untrusted content somewhere along the way, and being convinced that that content to do something with it that the operator didn't intend to do is, in his words, and mine included, an unsolved problem. 2.5 years of research has not produced a reliable mitigation. So with Atlas, we're doing a lot of things. We put agents at a lot of locations, all identifiable, all immediately tracked, boundaries, guidelines, constitution, inserted in every single device that we can do, as a way of prevention and learning and those sorts of things. But that does not solve the fundamental problem. The protocol simply assumes the agent can't be tricked. The protocol simply assumes the human is going to be in the loop. Where those assumptions fail, the protocol fails with them. Remember, we talked about this 2 shows ago and why, with Janus, we have built in if you have a human in the loop, it is digitally a human in the loop. An email is sent to a human as part of the digital workflow. If the human does not respond, that stops the entire process. And that's what's supposed to happen. Now, for those in the audience who work in the defense industry, yes, did that for many years, in critical infrastructure, federal systems, the voice that should land, hardest is not necessarily the independent researcher. Okay? It's some of the research that's going on at the nation's largest, IT provider for those systems, Leidos. And I've worked with many of them. I know many of them, and they are stand-up great guys. So like if you have heard Brandon Radosevich or John Halloran or in some of their work that they've talked about and in a one of their papers on the MCP safety audit, they write in the conclusion that the rest of the field has been dancing around for a year. The current MCP design carries a wide range of security risks for end users. Yeah, it's that simple. So when Leidos signs their name to that sentence, the room is going to hear it differently than when a startup signs their name to it. That's not a vendor warning, right? Okay. That's just the facts that many of us have been bringing this up for a long time. And now, one of the larger defense contractors, especially with deep federal ties, is saying in a published peer-reviewed research paper that the protocol now underlying 97 million installs is not yet engineered for the missions that it's being asked to support. This is a gap in, that orchestration is always and always and always going to be required to close. Not because the protocol is bad, but because the protocol is by design and by necessity minimal. It can't reason. The protocol can't synthesize. It can't even, weigh competitive objectives. It can't refuse an instruction. It can't escalate to a human. It can't step back and consider whether that chain of actions is it's executing still serves the original intent. Something has to do those things. Something has to sit above it. And that's what we've built our practice around at DigitalNet. Name cognitive agents, right? They're not LLM wrappers. They're reasoning entities with a persona, with memory, with judgment. And then even above them is the orchestration layer that decides which agent handles which task, holds context, enforces policy, maintains that audit trail that we want. And then below them is your heterogeneous compute environment, your quantum annealers, your simulators, your tools, your neuromorphic processors, traditional GPUs, all orchestrated by Zeus or Atlas. And throughout, the human on top of that chain, accountable for the decisions that are being made, and has the ability to override at any point in time. This is what the Janus platform is. This is what we mean when we say it's not an AI ops tool. It's a cognitive platform that makes AI ops possible. Because, the operational technology, the security technology, the financial technology, none of it functions as intelligence without a reasoning layer above the protocol. The frontier firms have figured this out. It's going to take a while, I think, for many in the 68% to do it, but they eventually will, or they just won't have a choice. The question, though, is how much are they going to spend and how much damage are they going to tolerate? Now, when we come back, the part of the story that, the trade press is, undercovering, I would say, the federal sovereignty question. Whose agents are allowed to speak to whose systems? What happens when that standards body is no longer the same as the government holding the contract? Or the commercial vendor that won't allow you to access anything? So stay with us. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Badeau, and we've spoken tonight about plumbing. We've spoken about the changing environment in which applications are run. We've spoken about the orchestration problem and the gap between the firms that have crossed it and the firms that haven't. Now, we're going to come to the layer that is rarely discussed on any show, on any podcast, and I believe it's going to define the next decade of AI policy. So, you know, the Model Context Protocol, MCP, does not just carry function calls. It can carry intent, it can carry data, it can carry correspondence. And when an agent on one system instructs an agent on another system to take action, the protocol is the wire by which that instruction travels. And the question of who is authorized to send that instruction and to which agent and on whose behalf is a question that the protocol, again by design, doesn't answer. Now, that question is starting to be answered fairly urgently by the U.S. government, of course. You know, we know on April 30th, the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, that's a lot, yeah, CISA, we'll go by CISA from now on, together with the National Security Agency, NSA, and in coordination with many of our, what we call the Five Eyes partners, Australia, Canada, UK, and New Zealand, they published a joint guidance document that was titled Careful Adoption of Agentic AI Services. Pretty bland, right? Not a very catchy title. But it is the first formal Five Eyes level cybersecurity guidance ever issued specifically for autonomous AI agents. And if you read it, go get it, and you can read it, and you can see that it doesn't pull any punches. The document identifies the core risks of agentic systems in language I want you to read very carefully, because it's the language you will see in every contracting officer's risk register for not only the rest of the fiscal year, but I think for a long time to come. And, you know, the risks quotes are, and I'm gonna specifically get these, expanded attack surface, privilege creep, behavioral misalignment, and obscure event records. We've been talking about this for years. That's why we designed our systems the way that we did. But that's four risks, each one its own category. Each one, you know, a category that MCP on its own doesn't even address. Expanded attack surface. Why? Because every tool an agent can reach is now a potential vector. Remember I said that you need to treat agents as insider threats? This is why. Privilege creep. Because every agent accumulates permissions across systems, and developers rarely shed them. That's why we developed our systems the way that we did, to force that. Again, every agent needs to be treated as an insider threat. Behavioral misalignment. How many times have I shown you on this show where we do something live and one of the models that we're using goes crazy, right? Because, an agent is pursuing a goal and it can do so in ways you don't predict. And it's going to give you not necessarily what you asked for. And we see it in the coding challenges all the time. Claude Code, great. Other tools are great, but they don't work consistently. Sometimes you've heard me say it, you get the B team. It's just the reality of it. Obscure event records. Not cool. But that's because when an agent acts through a chain of tools, the audit trail becomes a fog. You can't follow it. You can see something happened, but you don't have any idea why it happened. So how can you trust that? That's why you have to have a supreme orchestrator that tracks all that, can see every single thing that takes place, and then tells you why it took place. And these are not warnings of an alarmist trade publication, right? We've been saying it for years, and finally people are starting to listen. These are now coming from the NSA. They're coming from CISA. They're coming from our allies. And that was just published last month. Not many people even heard about it. But then in parallel, we talked about, NIST and through its, Center for AI Standards and Innovation, they've opened its formal request for agentic AI risk support. And the RFI, it states that AI agent systems, and I'm going to get this one right too, may be susceptible to hijacking, backdoor attacks, or other exploits. Yes. Yes. Finally, people are listening. Because we've been saying this since MCP was released. Hijacking, backdoor attacks, exploits. The vocabulary is the vocabulary of nation state cybersecurity. It's the vocabulary of zero trust pillars. It's the risk management frameworks, right? Things that we have seen. Standards bodies treating agentic AI not as a productivity story, but as a defense story. And the cyber AI profile under NISC, I think it was its interagency report, and it's 8596, I believe. Don't go check that for yourself, but I believe it was 8596. And it was a preliminary draft in December. It's bridging cybersecurity frameworks with AI risk management frameworks, specifically because of that. Hence, Atlas, and hence, Janus, how they're architected and how they work together. We have been leading this discussion for years. And now you all are ahead of everybody else because you've been listening. So, what does all this mean? Practically, okay, and not only for the federal markets and the federal contractors, but also on the commercial side, because the proliferation of MCP is, of course, everywhere. But it means that the protocol layer has now become the contested layer. It means that we use MCP, it's no longer a sufficient answer. To a government risk question. It means the next wave of agentic AI procurements are going to require some sort of evidence, not a promise, that there's an orchestration above the protocol enforcing the policy the contracting officers are going to expect. And it's the same thing on the commercial side. You have to have something that is enforcing these. You have to have a tool like Atlas to check the security of those pieces. You've got to have a tool like Janus so that you're consistently building these agents and these workflows and these missions in the proper, secure manner. On one side, though, you've got Anthropic and, of course, it's Project, Glasswing initiative that they have, a safety first framework, and it's explicitly designed for the defense of, like the Department of War and other critical infrastructure markets, and more auditability, more human in the loop. Good. They're finally catching up. On the other side, though, you have, maybe OpenAI or Reflection AI or some of those other companies that are embracing what they've called, really any lawful use of the doctrine, a more permissive integration model that's moving faster into operational deployment, but with looser governance guarantees. Now, both are gonna, well, hopefully sell to the government or commercial entities, and both are gonna win contracts, and both are gonna continue to do, work on that. And but they're placing really different bets about what sovereignty over agents looks like. And who's going to win? I don't know. I think, this is something though contracting officers and procurement specialists on the commercial side are going to have to choose between. And this is where I want to really help, the audience tonight and where we want to go. The Model Context Protocol, it's a magnificent achievement. It really is. It's in 18 months, it's accomplished what it took the early internet nearly a decade to accomplish. It has made agentic AI economically viable at scale. And we talk about the democracy of AI and the making sure everybody has an opportunity to use it, and how Janus wants to, democratize that entire process. But MCP, it is, by any honest reading, it's going to be one of those foundational technologies for the next 20 years. But it's not enough. It's just not. Not on its own. And this is what I caution everybody. Look, ask questions, and dig into all of these AI systems that are telling you they have agents. And if you have no way of orchestrating those agents at a higher level, then you are part of the 68%. You are part of that organizational piece that is trying to be at the forefront, but your agents are just agents. They're just susceptible to all four of those key things I mentioned before. Look at what's orchestrating them. And if your answer is, well, we have some orchestration, and we have, oh, well, we should have some humans in the loop, then I would be concerned. And that's where your focus needs to be. So thank you for watching the show this week. Episode after episode on this show, we are trying to give you the information that you need to succeed. Okay. We want to make sure that you understand tools like Janus and Atlas and some of those other ones. They're out there, and they are an answer to many of these issues that we're bringing in. Over the next decade, this AI policy is going to be at the forefront, and it's starting to really converge on us. And We have to remember humans always have to own the action and they always have to own the accountability. If you stop with those two, then, you're really setting yourself up for success. And then you can have your agents own the reasoning and the synthesis. Until next week, I'm Dr. Alan Badeau. This has been AI Today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.